is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. This is Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show.
Hello there, Retro Maniacs. Welcome back to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. I'm your host, Andy Godoy, and this is episode 88. Now, today's episode is going to be all about Codemasters, one of my favourite gaming companies of all time, one of the UK's best gaming companies of all time, and it's a gaming company that is still going to this day. Right, so before I go on to the main show, I just want to talk about why this podcast is running a little bit late. I found out earlier on during the week that I was meant to be doing a show just as a backup one, and I thought, I can do this. I can do an episode on Codemasters, one of my favourite gaming companies ever, and it's just been fine in the time, really. Some of you may know that I'm no longer living in Essex. I'm living between two places. I'm either living at my mum's house in South London or in my mother-in-law's house with my wife up there as well, up in Yorkshire. And it's just basically been hard, you know, commuting up, commuting down, getting the megabus. And I tell you what a horrible experience the megabus is. I can't stand it. So yeah, I'm missing my family absolutely loads, you know, because I work for London Underground. And on my days off, when I'm not working, I travel up to Yorkshire. And it's just, a lot of the time, it's just been hard trying to find the time. Because at my mum's house, my brother's also come over. He's come over from Austria, actually. And he's brought his wife down, which we haven't met before. And I could have recorded the podcast Monday evening after I finished work, or Tuesday evening once I finished work. But I thought I'd be a little bit sociable and sort of talk to my brother, talk to his wife, you know, spend some time with my mum as well. And when I wasn't doing that, I was actually just playing games. So I do apologize then, guys, that this episode of the podcast is running a little bit late. It will be coming out Friday, believe it or not, just a little bit later. So it's not going to be all fact-based. I'm not going to tell you about, you know, Codemasters, the darlings, you know, what the mother was called, what the pet dog was called. It's not going to be full of boring facts. It's just going to be a nostalgic-based episode where I just try and remind you how much of our great company Codemasters were and still are, basically. Right, so one of the things I want to talk about is our sponsors. And again, we cannot do this show without our sponsors. Our sponsors are really important. So big special mention to our sponsors. First up is Dino Dini, the legendary programmer himself. And you can find Dino Dini on Twitter at DNDN1011. Right, so one of our next main big sponsors is Play. Now, Play, you know, do Play Expo Manchester, Play Expo Blackpool. They do the biggest UK retro gaming events. And I tell you what, these events are amazing. Now, I've done little events like Retromania. And how on earth Andy and Dave do these events, it's just beyond comprehension. A lot of hard work goes into these events. And I tell you what, guys, if you haven't been to one of these amazing events, please check them out. There is another Play Expo happening, and they will be in Manchester in, I think, October. But I think they will also be at Eurogamer, so guys, so definitely check them out. And big special thank you to Play again, especially Andy and Dave, who, you know, have treated us fantastically when we have gone to these events. So big special thanks to Play. Our next main big sponsor is Funstock.co.uk. Now, what I love about Funstock is not only have they got lots of gaming stuff, but they've got lots of retro gaming stuff. And the beautiful thing is, if you head on over down there, say, for example, you want to buy a USB SNES control pad or a USB NES control pad, you can do that. But They've given us a promo code which gives you a 10% discount, and all you have to do is enter the words Asylum at the checkout page and you get a 10% discount. So definitely check out funstock.co.uk. Now, one of our latest sponsors that we do have is Retro Towers. Now, Retro Towers, I met Daniel at Retromania 2, and he's the one who runs Retro Towers. It's an amazing retro gaming website where it's the only place now in the UK that actually officially sells the EverDrives. So you can check them out. Check out retrotowers.co.uk. And I tell you what, big thank you to Retro Towers for actually sponsoring us. I really appreciate that. We're going to sort a little discount thing with those guys at some point soon, so stay tuned for that, guys. Right, so we've got even more sponsors. The next sponsor we've got is Anthony Ogden, aka Uniforex, podcast host and all-round lovely bloke, top bloke. Now, the next sponsor we've got is the Indiana Jones of retro gaming himself. That is Ali, aka The Retro Hunter. I tell you what, follow Ali on Twitter, The Retro Hunter, because, my God, he finds retro gaming goodies all the time at car boot sales. It's just amazing, the stuff he finds. But thank you very much, Ali, for actually sponsoring us. And, again, you know, podcast host and really lovely bloke as well. We've got Michael J. Hay, who's got an amazing website called Retro Mesh. And in one of his early podcasts he actually done, he interviewed the guy from Airwolf. So it's an episode that you should definitely check out. And a big special thank you to Mikey. And again, Mikey, congratulations on your birth for your recent baby. I know the baby's about 3-4 months old now. Congratulations again. And last but not least, we'd like to thank John Stratford. So again, guys, our sponsors, we can't do this show without our sponsors. And if you want to sponsor the, you know, Retro Asylum, head on over to retroasylum.com. There's a little PayPal button. Click on that. I mean, it is set at £5. If you want to give a little bit less, you can sort of do it as a gift. Or if you want to do even more than £5, please do so. I really appreciate it. So now we've got that out the way, let's tell you a little bit about what I've been up to. Now, I mentioned earlier that I'm living between places. You know, I'm living up in Yorkshire with my wife, you know, at my mother-in-law's house. And a lot of the time I'm down here in London where I'm recording this podcast now. And I've been doing this journey up and down now for about 2 weeks. It's hard work, but I guess I'm missing my family loads. I really am missing them. You know, I miss my baby, I miss my wife. But what I've been doing to keep myself sane is playing loads of games. And I've got all my retro systems out and about. I've got a little room here at my mum's place. It's my old room that when I was a teenager, I used to live here. I've got 3 TVs. And on display, what have I got here? I've got my Super Nintendo. I've got, like, my Super Pro UFO 8, I think it's called. It's like a cheaper version of the EverDrive, not quite as good, but, you know, I can get some, you know, play some good Super Nintendo games. I've got my Sega Dreamcast, I've got my N64, my Mega Drive, my GameCube, my modded Xbox, got my PS2, PS1, Atari 2600, Sega Saturn, and it's just nice playing all these systems, you know, on proper CRTVs, you know. It's something that really can't be replicated via emulation or, you know, on a flat screen TV, especially some of the older systems. You know, it's just like the other day I got my ZX Spectrum Plus 2 out, and again, it's just something so magical about getting the game out, putting the tape in, and just watching it load. And normally I used to sort of go and make a cup of tea or make a sandwich, but this time round I was just, I was kind of glad that the game actually worked and it was actually loading up. And I put on Fantasy World Dizzy, and it's just lovely just watching the little sort of screeching noises, and then the screen fills up with the graphic, you know, the graphics. And it's really magical. And when it loaded up and it went Fantasy World Dizzy in a very Glen 83-100-esque voice, you know, it was really, really nice. So I'm getting a lot more game playing done, actually. You know, I've been playing a lot of Atari 2600 games. I'll cover what games I've got in a future episode, because I want to do an episode about my actual game collection and about how it's a hobby, how it's become an addiction, lack of space, you know, having things over emulation. But again, it's a lovely thing to have this to keep me sane a little bit. I mean, I'm missing my family and everything, and it's kind of nice to have that distraction. And what better distraction is than having all my systems out? Now, when I've been commuting to Yorkshire, I have been playing quite a few games, actually, because if I get the mega bus, it's like about 4 hours to where I live in Yorkshire. And I started thinking, what do I do? You know, there's only so much I can look on the internet. So I've been playing emulation on my PSP. And I've been playing Sonic the Hedgehog, number 2 and number 3. And I tell you what, they're actually pretty good. It's not the sort of game that I could actually just sit down at home and play. Because now, you know, because of emulation and I've got quite a lot of games, it's something that it feels more of an arcade experience, you know, pick up and play. And I just started playing, well, I did it in a strange order. I started playing Sonic 3 because it was the one that I'd never really played. But I think Charlotte from Retro Asylum on the Facebook page, she mentioned that it was her favourite game. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And I started playing it. And I tell you what, I'd played the game back in the day and I wasn't too keen on it. And then the more and more I played it on the journey to Yorkshire, I really started getting into it. It's a very large game. Again, not a lot has changed from Sonic 1 and 2. The graphics, you know, are a little bit better. It's a little bit faster. But all in all, I quite enjoyed it. It's nowhere near as good as Mario. But again, they're two separate games. So, you know, it really, you know, it's not fair to compare it. But out of all the Sonic games, actually, I've got to say I've enjoyed Sonic 3, you know, the most out of all of them. And then I started playing Sonic 2 as well. And Sonic 2, I've really been getting into that again. I'm playing through as Knuckles now. I haven't got Sonic and Knuckles on the Mega Drive, but I've got it on the PSP on, emulation thing. I'm playing as Knuckles on Sonic 2. It's a fun experience. I'm really enjoying it. Probably playing it more as than Sonic the Hedgehog himself, but systems I do want to play. I'm really enjoying playing my Atari 2600, guys. It's a system that was my first proper system. I mean, I used to have a ZX81, but that wasn't really mine, that was my brother's. So the first system that really felt like it was mine was the Atari 2600. And I've got about 10 or 12 cartridges now, but some of the other games that I've been playing of the Atari 2600 have been on my Sega Dreamcast, because I've got an emulator, and I tell you what, it's amazing playing some of these games. But, you know, I'm going to start collecting a few more games. I'm going to check out the car boot sales here in South London, actually. There's bound to be a few. I'm going to check out a charity show. I do miss, you know, Essex for that. You know, the Dunton Car Boot Fair was absolutely amazing. I'm so glad that Ali introduced me to that. And that's where we met Ali for the first time. I remember it was me, Dean, we went down to meet Ali. And it's always a bit scary when you meet people that you talk to online because you think, oh God, what they're going to be like, a bit weird. But it was nice meeting Ali. Ali's one of the coolest people I know, really down to earth. And he's got an eye for spotting things. And it's not so much buying the retro stuff that I miss, actually. I miss hanging out with the guys up in Essex. You know, I miss hanging out with Rob. I miss hanging out with Mikey, Steve, Paul Davis. And, you know, it's a nice little retro gaming community down there. I mean, being in London, I'm not too far, I guess. So I could always try and organise something to meet up with them. But, you know, I miss sort of being somewhat local and being able to sort of catch up and play some games. So I've made up my mission. Next week, when I've got my week of earlies, I'm going to just wander off to charity shops and see what retro gaming goodies I can actually find.
Hello, Mr. Sid here. If you're after some retro gaming goodness, then you have come to the right place. From the Speccy to the Sega Master System, Capcom to Codemasters, and Space Invaders to Space Harrier, it's all covered in the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum.
Right, now I'm going to talk about one of my favourite gaming companies ever, and that is Codemasters. Now, I know a lot of people love Ocean, a lot of people love Rare, but personally, my favourite gaming company ever was Codemasters. They're still going to this day, which I find absolutely amazing. They started off in 1986, and that was two brothers. It was Richard and David Darling, and they used to sort of program for Mastertronic.
and they decided to branch out for themselves. And in 1986, they started with their own company, and that was Codemasters. And I tell you what a gaming company. Right, like I said before, now, I'm not going to give you all the facts about Codemasters, how they got the money together to actually build the company. This episode really is going to be more of a nostalgic-based episode, so let me paint a picture for you guys. Let's travel back in time for when I was about 9 or 10 years old. So that's when I first got my ZX Spectrum Plus 2, and I remember sort of going to my local Woolworths. And that's when Woolworths was really popular. You could get anything and everything there. And gaming was what I used to love the most about, you know, Woolworths. I used to go to my local Woolworths, which was in Brixton. And I used to go there, and it was just amazing just watching all the games sort of on display. And they're all, you could spot like a ZX Spectrum game from a C64 game, especially the Codemasters, because they had like a little label on top, like a little thing. Spectrum was yellow, the Amstrad was orange, and I think the C64 was red. So, you know, they stood out in that respect. But what I love about Codemasters was they really, really stood out. And you needed a game to stand out from the majority of the games. And what Codemasters did brilliantly was with the graphic designs. So let's talk about, say for example, BMX Simulator, which was the first game that I probably got from Codemasters. Now, BMXing was the big thing back in the day, well, especially in South London anyway. And I remember going through all the different games from all different companies and so on. And this is the one that stood out the most. I just loved the graphic design of the cover of BMX Simulator. Now, I mentioned the word simulator there because that's what Codemasters really became known for, simulators. And pretty much they had fruit machine simulator, boxing simulators, anything you can think of, they had the word simulator at the end of it. But going back to BMX Simulator, the cover was, you know, there was a guy on a bike, you know, bicycle, and then when you turn over the cassette, you know, box itself, it had, like, on the back, it said actual Spectrum screenshots, and it had, like, this zappy sort of, like, box, and it had, you know, it said actual Spectrum screenshots. And when you look at it, really, the Spectrum screenshots weren't really that great. They were, like, a monochrome green, and they were very simple, the graphics, but it's just the way they marketed it and the way they done it. It just really wowed me. I was like, wow, look at this! Actual Spectrum screenshots, and the whole, you know, fonts and everything they use really captured my imagination, just like really just made it look really, really cool, more so than other gaming companies, you know. So I picked up BMX Simulator for $1.99. I took that home where I, you know, like where I'm actually living now at the moment, and loaded it up, and it had a beautiful sort of like a loading screen, and again it was like a guy sort of like cycling on his BMX. And then when I got the game, I think the music was by David Whittaker. And this is one of the things I want to talk about as well. Codemasters had some amazing musicians, actually. They really had some amazing music when it came to budget gaming. So, when I played BMX Simulator, I'll quickly give you a little review on the game itself. Personally, I didn't like it. I'm still not a fan of it. But it's a whole presentation of the whole thing. The game itself plays a little bit about like Super Sprint, the arcade game, but instead, you know, you're two little, you can play as two players and you cycle around in a circle and try and do the fastest lap. Now, it was always fun playing the game with two players, but even though I wasn't too good at it or didn't enjoy this game as much as some of the other Codemasters games, it did have an amazing feature, and that feature was the replay. And talking about features, Codemasters always came out with some special amazing things which I'll mention later on during the podcast, but the replay feature in this was amazing, and it was always fun just trying to see where like my friend messed up or I crashed. It was just lovely seeing that replay. But yeah, I wasn't a big fan of BMX Simulator, but one game that I did love, and it played very similar, but I just enjoyed the graphics maybe, was Grand Prix Simulator. And again, I love the box art for this game. The box art is, what they did was just really amazing. It was two sort of like cars, and it said new release, and on the background again, it had like the thing that said actual Spectrum screenshots, and it was just what was written. Amazing playability, features a very competitive two-player option, 14 cunning device circuits under bridges through oil patches, power sliding around corners, trying to beat the other drivers, you know. And it was things like that that Codemasters did amazing. And again, it was like the loading screen. The loading screen was beautiful. It was really bright. It was really colourful. And again, what you got in the actual main game was a very, very basic, you know, Super Sprint clone, basically. And I think Cody's got into trouble, actually, for having a game that was very, very similar to them. And the music, once again, was done by David Whittaker. And again, David Whittaker is a name that just keeps on reappearing and reappearing when it comes to Codemasters games. And I think David Whittaker is probably, you know, one of the reasons why Codemasters was so successful in the early days, because a lot of the time, again, games were very simple, but it was music and playability as well as graphics that made a game. And in this case, you know, Grand Prix Simulator was very basic, so it was the, you know, title screen music that made it, you know, like appealing to me. Right, so let's move on to the next game then that I got, ATV Simulator. And before I go on to tell you a little bit about this game itself, I think what we should do is listen to that amazing music once again by David Whittaker from ATV Simulator. Totally amazing. Once again, that music was from ATV Simulator. It was composed by Dave Whittaker. And again, Dave Whittaker was the main man when it came to making music for Codemasters. Now, let me tell you a little bit about the game. The game itself was pretty decent, actually. It's a two-player game, two-player split screen. And let me just quickly describe to you the box art. Now, you can find all these box art covers at World of Spectrum. If you just go to World of Spectrum, type in Codemasters, it'll bring up the whole list of all the games that they've got, actually. And I tell you what, again, talking about the graphic design, it really sold me on it. Because when you were buying games back for the ZX Spectrum, you had so much choice, you only had so much pocket money. So certain things really caught your eye. And like I mentioned before, it was the amazing cover design. Like, you've got two guys on these all-terrain vehicles, you know, and they're having a race against each other. And on the cover itself, it says, features two-player action by the authors of the number one bestseller, BMX Simulator. And then, you know, you'd always look at the back. And again, in that yellow sort of, like, zappy sort of thing, it said, ATV Simulator, quad racing at its best, sand duning, snow donuts, dirt tracking, fun hyper jumps on 180 wheelie spins, but great fun. ATV massive in the States and soon will be here, a must for all ATV fans. And it, again, it said actual Spectrum screenshots. So you look at the screenshots themselves, the game itself looks pretty nice, actually. It's all monochrome. Depending on the environment, you have different color. If you're in the sort of like foresty greeny area, it's green. If you're in the desert, it's yellow. If you're in the snow, it's white. But the game itself was, you had to sort of like race against each other, and you had to go over obstacles. It was a bit tough, actually. I think it must have had about 7 or 8 levels, or something like that. And it's one of Codemasters' best games, actually. I got hours and hours of gameplay. Never managed to finish the game, but it was always fun playing the game. It kind of reminded me of Kickstart, you know, Kickstart 2. I wouldn't say it's as good as Kickstart 2, but again, for $1.99, you can't complain. One of the best games that Codemasters, in my opinion, did back in the day. Right, so the next game I want to talk about is Ghost Hunters. Now, again, I'm talking about the games in chronological order from what I bought them, not the games that, you know, by the time they got released. Now, what stands out from this game, for me, basically, is this game was done by Philip and Andrew Oliver. Now, this is sort of before they really, really, really hit the big time. Now, going back to the early episodes of Retro Asylum, and even 1HMPS, when I interviewed the Oliver twins, you know, we found out that they were going to these trade shows, they got talking to Richard and David Darlings, and they sort of like showed them like a game that they made, and then they got brought in. And they came out with a few other games. I think this is one of the earlier ones they'd done for Codemasters. Now, the game itself is not necessarily that good, and looking at the cover, again, go to World of Spectrum, you can see the cover. It's not the greatest cover that was actually done for a game on by Codemasters. You've got like a Rambo-like type character shooting a machine gun against a Nosferatu-type character there. And what did strike me and what made me buy this game was the word Ghost Hunters. So Codemasters were very, very clever in making games that just really appealed to kids. I mean, this was around the time of Ghostbusters, and as a kid, you're curious about ghosts, and it really drew me towards this. And the other thing that stood out on the cover was it said featured voice synthesis, so it had sampled speech. The sampled speech was very sort of like croaky, very, you know, not very clear, but at the time, for a game that was $1.99, it really stood out and really sort of like made me think, you know, I want to check this game out. Now, I'll read the description of this game. Hunk Studbuckles. Now, how's that for a name for you? Brother is trapped in the Nightmare Mansion. He must destroy the spirits of evil if they're to meet this side of hell. Does he fail or succeed? His fate is up to you. Well, now, I've got to be honest, guys. This game isn't really that good. Did have an interesting feature, actually. What you had to do in this game, you could play as one player where you actually control the guy, or you could control it as two players where the other player controlled the little aiming target, so you could shoot, you know, like monsters, and you could work as a team. So that was one interesting feature that this game had. Overall, apart from that, the game was pretty average. Now, the other game I want to talk about, actually, is Super Robin Hood. And this was one of the first games that the Oliver twins actually done for Codemasters. They originally, like they mentioned in the podcast that I recorded with them, they said that they did the first version on the Amstrad CPC 464. And it's still somewhat playable, actually. That even appeared, I think, on the NES as well, as part of one of their cheaper cartridges. But Super Robin Hood was a fantastic game. I will be playing in the background the music from the game itself. It's pretty catchy. But again, I love this game. You know, they took a license, you know, that was Robin Hood, and they knew how to sell a game. And this was one of the big licenses that they had at the time, because everyone knows who Robin Hood is, you know. You hear about Robin Hood when you're in school, you know, it's like part of pop culture, really, you know. These TV series, you know, like films, Robin Hood and the Merry Men, and, you know, all that stuff. And the game itself, it's a little platformer. It's all nicely detailed. You collect keys, you climb up ladders. I don't remember them being giant spiders in the TV show or in the books, but yeah, you fight against giant spiders. But the reason why I did get this game, again, was because it had music by Dave Whittaker. And that's one of the things. Back in the day, if you knew a programmer or you knew a musician and they advertised that in certain games, you'd be like, you know what, I want to buy this game for that sole reason. You know, it didn't matter if the game was any good or not. But turned out this game was pretty average, you know. But, I mean, I think it did well. It really sort of, like, made stars of the Oliver twins. And then later on, they produced another game which really made them famous and really done well for Codemasters' fortunes. But yeah, check out Super Robin Hood. So it's a great little fun game. Now, I know I'm talking a lot about the 8-bit version, specifically the ZX Spectrum, but this was the period where Codemasters meant a lot to me, basically. I really spent a lot of pocket money on affordable ZX Spectrum games, and that was by Codemasters. And again, they were the king of budgets. They really sold loads of games. Honestly, they had hundreds and hundreds of simulators. For example, some of the simulators they had professional soccer. they had so many simulators. Like, they had professional snooker simulator, professional ski simulator, pro tennis simulator, fruit machine simulator. That's what they really capitalized on, because they'd done so well with the BMX simulator that if it had the word simulator on, you honestly assumed that it was going to be another classic. And, you know, a lot of the games were hit and miss, but again, for $1.99, and I know I keep on emphasizing $1.99, but Codemasters released hundreds of games. Honestly, I'm on World of Spectrum at the moment. I'm scrolling down some of the list here, and there's absolutely loads of games. Some of my other favorite games are Steg the Slug, Super Stuntman, which is another fantastic game. Now, one of the games I do want to talk about is Dizzy. Now, Dizzy is a big, important part of my life. It's one of the games that really captured my imagination. It was the game that I first played on the Amstrad CPC 464 on my cousin's Amstrad. And then I had to rush home and sort of like convince my dad to sort of like give me £1.99 or £2 basically to get this game. So a few days later, I ended up getting Dizzy on the ZX Spectrum. And I tell you what, I really love this game. I've got mixed feeling which music I prefer. Sometimes I prefer the music on the ZX Spectrum, but at other points, I like the music of the Amstrad, which is what I'll play right now before I tell you a bit more about the game itself. So I know a lot of our long-term listeners will be like, oh, he's talking about Dizzy again. But you know what, guys? Dizzy, I love Dizzy. I think he's such an amazing character. The Oliver Twins really struck gold. It really made them famous. It really done really well for Codemasters' fortunes. And it started like an amazing series of cartoon adventure games featuring that gloved-wearing little egg. Now, what I loved about this game was, first of all, it's like a beautiful little adventure game. The game was bright. The game was colourful. You had a really appealing character. He was happy all the time. He somersaulted all around the place. He had to try and save his kingdom. So he was very heroic. It was a bit annoying that he could only carry one item. But, you know, it was a great little game. And I won't delve too much about Dizzy itself. But, you know, he had loads of sequels. You know, he'd done really, really well for himself. Treasure Island Dizzy, Fantasy World Dizzy. And there was even a free Dizzy game that came with Crash Magazine, which was a Dizzy 3.5 before Magic. Now, I do want to talk about a few other little things, first of all, guys. Talking about Dizzy, Dizzy really sort of like helped create some amazing other cartoon adventure style games, like the Seymour games. The Seymour games, he had some great games. He was like a similar character, but he did different sort of adventures as well. Then you had Little Puff as well, which was a little dragon. And then you had Slightly Magic, which was done by our friend Colin Jones. You know, great game. So cartoon adventure games really sort of struck a chord with like all the youngsters at the time. And, you know, they were bright, colourful, and everyone really enjoyed them. Now, the amazing thing about Codemasters, they were really smart in sort of how they did the games. Like, sometimes they would re-release the games, but they were really clever in the way they did that. They came out with a series of games called the Quattro. So you had Quattro Adventure, Quattro Races, Quattro Firepower. So sometimes they have a new game in there, which wasn't sort of like that good, but they'd mix it in with, say, like a Dizzy game. And it worked well. It sold again, so people would buy games again by them. But yeah, they're great at doing stuff like that. And that's what I loved about Codemasters. They were so smart in sort of getting people to buy their games. Like, another example is the Dizzy Collection. Even though I had the Dizzy games, I still had to get it because it had this amazing big box and it had Dizzy 1, 2, 3 and 4. And it just, it looked nice and it made me buy that all over again. Now what I want to do now then, guys, I want to talk a little bit about what the community has said about, you know, the certain games. So I put out a few messages out on Facebook and on Twitter, and I had a few nice little replies actually. So one of the things I want to talk about then is some of the choices of games that people have chosen about their favourite Codemaster game. Right, so one of the games I want to talk about then was chosen by Milo on Facebook, on Retro Asylum's Facebook page, and he's gone for Slicks and the CJ series. I think by Slicks, maybe he means the Slightly Magic. I could be wrong, but I'm sure he's saying that. But yeah, the CJ Elephant series. Wow, really good game. I have always thought they played like an inferior version of the New Zealand Story, but that's not a bad thing. I mean, it was a good idea, CJ's Elephant Antics. You know, CJ in the US. You know, you played as Little Elephant, you had to try and get back home, and, you know, it was two players, and that's something that the New Zealand Story didn't actually have. The only thing is, though, that the scrolling on pretty much all the versions was a little bit, sort of, it shuddered as the screen moved along, even on the C64. There's a really nice version on the NES as well, which plays a lot better, but one of the most amazing things about CJ Elephant Antics was that amazing music. The music was phenomenal. Absolutely amazing, and if you haven't played it, give it a go. Now, Steve Nicklin, he said he definitely chose a Grand Prix Simulator on the Atari 8-bit with its Dave Whittaker's music and sampled speech. And again, I've mentioned Grand Prix Simulator. It's a great little game. Phil Hindle has chosen Micro Machines on Sega Mega Drive. He loved the 4-player with a J-Cart. Now, I will be talking about the 16-bits and how Codemasters advance in a few moments. Steve Nicklin chose Micro Machines. He said, I always suspected that Micro Machine was based off Grand Prix Simulator with improved graphics. Now, I always thought the same thing, but I always thought as well that Micro Machines looked very similar to an earlier release that they had, which was Super Stuntman. It was like a little car, and you moved up and down and tried to get from A to B. And they just sort of, like, changed it up a little bit. But yeah, I completely agree with what he said there. Thurston Johnston was gone for BMX Simulator. He really up all that as time as a kid. Andrew Kirk, he's gone for Micro Machines or Rockstar at My Hamster on the C64 or Amiga. Ian Wood has gone for Micro Machines, and Gareth Hammer has gone for Dizzy, of course. Gareth, Dizzy, smart choice there. Sam, you know, Mr. Sid, has gone for Moto X, Snooker Simulator, and the Dizzy games. Dazza has gone for CJ's Elephant Antics, the Dizzy games, BMX Simulator 2. I've never played that. I'll have to give that a go. Hopefully it's an improvement on the first game. Micro Machines. Oh yeah, and Tarzan Goes Apes. Right, but last but not least, we have Aaron on Twitter, who is AaronUB40, and he basically picked CJ's Elephant Antics on the C64. He put it a classic platformer. So before I move on to the next section and we start talking about a few other Codemaster-related things, some other innovative things they've done, I think what I'll do, I'll play the music from CJ's Elephant Antics on the C64. Enjoy, guys. We'll be right back. Right, now one of the things I want to talk about is the CD Games Pack. Now this is one of the things that really showed that Codemasters were really innovative. Now this came out in 1989, it cost $19.95 and it came with 30 games on one CD. Now it was an interesting thing that Codemasters done, because the way this worked is that you got one sort of like joystick cable that plugged into the joystick port and that plugged into the CD player. Now you had a CD that you'd basically with 30 games that you put into your CD player, and you also had a cassette. Now what you'd do with this cassette is, you know, press play, load it up, it would take about 2-3 minutes, and that would give you sort of like let the Spectrum know what it was going to do. That was like the program, and then from there all you had to do is select a track. You had to select track number one, and that was like the audio test. So once you did that, it took about 10 seconds, then you could select a list of games. Now the list of games was really varied. Actually, you had BMX Simulator 2, Treasure Island Dizzy 2, Professional Super Simulator, Starfighter 3D, Ghost Hunters, Super Stuntman, Fruit Machine, Motocross Simulator. So you had 30 games at your disposal, and all you had to do was basically look at the little booklet that came in the box and select the number. So say for example I wanted to play Ninja Massacre, that was number 33 in the list, so I just skipped to 33 in the track and press play on that, and then the game would load up. Now it wouldn't load up instantly, it would take a little bit of time, so after about 15 to 20 seconds the game would actually load up. But I mean, that was an amazing thing that, you know, that Codemasters did. I don't know of any other 8-bit, you know, companies that managed to try and do that, because they knew that, you know, times were changing, you know, people wanted their games instant and fast, and this was an interesting way of doing it. So you can check these out actually on eBay. I'm not too sure how much they are on eBay. I would be interested in actually getting one for my actual ZX Spectrum. I mean, I can play them off my iPhone, but I think it's just something nice to actually own. And again, they cost $19.95 back in the day. So that was one of the interesting things I want to talk about. Now, one of the other things I want to talk about is when Codemasters started branching out away from the 8-bit computers and 16-bit computers, they started moving to the 8-bit console, like the NES. Now, it was interesting when they did this, because they started releasing some of the Quattro games again. They started re-releasing some of their ZX Spectrum game and 8-bit games. And they released Treasure Island Dizzy. They released loads of other games like Super Robin Hood, CJ's Elephant Antics, Super Stuntman. Some of the games went by different names, like Dizzy the Adventurer was a Prince of the Yoke Folk on the ZX Spectrum, pretty much. But it was the same game. But one of the interesting things that I found with Codemasters during this period was the Game Genie. This is where it got kind of interesting with Codemasters, because they basically took on Nintendo, as far as I know. And the way the Game Genie worked is, you know, you put it into the cartridge thing and you could play around with the code, hence changing. You could give yourself extra lives, you could sort of change things within the game. And I don't think Nintendo were too happy with that. So they ended up going to court, and it was one of the things that the Codemasters ended up winning in the end. And I think they succeeded in sort of beating the big end. So then this Game Genie ended up coming out for loads of other systems like the Sega Genesis or Mega Drive, the Game Gear, Game Boy. And it was an interesting thing though. So I'm really surprised they managed to take on Nintendo and actually win. But speaking about the Nintendo games for from Codemasters, they didn't quite look or feel right. They looked a lot cheaper compared to a lot of the more modern sort of NES games. I mean, Dizzy just couldn't compete to, say, like Mario or to Mega Man, where those games were more bright, more colourful, had better audio, they were bigger. I think Dizzy actually struggled on the NES. Don't get me wrong, I mean, his finest outing was possibly on the NES, and that was I can't remember what it's called. It was one of the Adventure Dizzy games, and it was like Massive Fantastic Adventure Dizzy, it was called. And it was huge, it was massive, it was a fantastic game, and it really sort it featured things that weren't even on the Mega Drive version. That's how good that version actually was. Now, talking about the Mega Drive and the NES there, one of the games they did release on the NES and eventually on the Mega Drive was Micro Machines. Now, the first Micro Machine was a fun little game, you know, you just raced around the track, had a bit of fun, and it was an interesting concept. It was based on the toys, I believe, and it's a fun little racing game. But for me, Micro Machines really grabbed me and really hooked me when it came out on the Sega Mega Drive, and that was Micro Machines 2 Tournament Edition. Wow, the hours and hours I spent playing that game, just hours and hours. It's a game that I still love playing to this day. If we have retro events, it's one of the games that it's always a good idea to get people, you know, to play this game, because it was amazing, again, innovative what they managed to do. Now, you had your cartridge, but you also had two joystick ports there as well. So I think you could even play up to 8 players. So you'd have 2 players on the normal Mega Drive ports, and then you had 2 control pads on the cartridge ports. But I think on each control pad, you could play a couple of players. So it was a maximum of 8 players. And Micro Machines 2 was such an amazing game. And it even featured Violet Berlin from Bad Influence, the TV show. But it's a game that's still addictive. I think maybe it was slightly bettered on the PS1 with Micro Machines V3. But again, I think they've done really well for themselves with this game, with, you know, it was a great license, and Codemasters to this day are still doing well. I mean, before I skip ahead, I mean, they ended up doing the Colin McRae series on the PS1, which is still going, you know, to this day. They did the music series, which I think in America was called MTV Music Generator, and I remember getting this on the PS1 as a youngster, when I was in my late teens, and really getting into that. So it's amazing what Codemasters has achieved. Now, I'm not going to drag on this episode for too long, you know, due to sort of like time things I've got. You know, I've got to call it an early night tonight because I've got to be up for 3 in the morning, guys. But Codemasters is just like, it's one of the best companies. You know, other British companies have sort of like had their fame and then they've just disappeared. But Codemasters are still making some amazing games to this day, so big respect for them. Please check out some of the games I mentioned earlier on. Once again, I just want to give a big special thanks to a few people out there, guys. I want to thank the whole of the Retro Asylum team. I also want to thank Steve Perry. Big special thanks to my good mate Dean Swain, you know, because like occasionally when I get bored, I send him a little text message and he replies back. Big special thanks to the whole Retromaniacs out there, the Retro Asylum community. Thank you very much for downloading the show. Please sort of like follow us on Twitter, and most important of all, please leave us an iTunes reviews. Your iTunes reviews really help us get noticed. We've got 137 iTunes reviews. Let's see if we can take it to 140. Right, guys, I'm going to sort of call it a day now. I'm going to play a music track. I'm not going to tell you what it is. See if you can guess what that music is. Thanks very much, guys. Goodbye.